Okay, hi everybody. Don't want to begin this session with a cough, but sorry, it seems that I have done that. Maybe just a little bit of water will do the job. Okay, welcome to all of you. Here it is, early morning, north of the Arctic Circle. We're in the Little Bear Meditation Center. It's getting so dark here, sun doesn't rise for a long time. But okay, that's all right. The inner sun will rise, and that's what we're trying to do with respect to this work on the dissipation of glamour. I just give me 1 minute here, and I'll be right back with you. Okay, well, we have a lot of very interesting material to cover today. He's sort of leading us up to the kinds of formulas and meditations we have been using. And we'll see how far we get. I never know how far we will get, but it's important to go more deeply than it is to rush through to make sure that his teaching becomes well planted in our consciousness. So let's just all link together before we begin. And whatever continent we may be on, we're in Australia, New Zealand, we're in Europe, we're in the Americas. And maybe sometimes we'll be joined by people in Far East Asia. We have a lot of students there also. We'll just get the sense of being in each other's presence as souls, as observing consciousnesses. And of working as one group, one unit together in the sight of the hierarchy. And cooperating with the hierarchy, without whom, as we will see here, this work could not really be done, or at least not nearly as effective. So we work on our own, of course, always with the group in mind, and then we gather weekly for the very necessary work on the dissipation of glamour, and we try to equip ourselves to do this. There's so much glamour in the world, and it's glamour primarily that brought on the First and Second World Wars. And we have those noises happening again. The warlike attitude with the clashing ideologies, some of them very centered on the personality, very limited, and very full of illusion, you might say, and others much more inclusive and supportive of the hierarchical intention, and this is what we in our life want to support. We'll just sound the om together. We declare our intention to work together. Now, as you know, this is just one of the number of efforts around the world that is launching a concerted attack against Glamour, as Master DK has advised us to do. Olivia Tuya and I decided that we would do this, and there are many others that are doing it in their own way, in their own place, and using the formula, so we're really one large world group. Well, maybe not so large, but hopefully large enough to make a difference. So, as usual, I'll begin with a reading from the book, and we'll have a chance to discuss a few things, either questions or statements or responses to what is read or what you may have been thinking, you know, as you ponder these matters during the week. One can be very effective, you know, even in a very short minute. Once one has the ability to focus the three lights and project them onto the astral plane on behalf of ridding oneself of individual glamours, or even when joining with a group, just instantaneous use of that beam. It's like the beam of the unicorn. I'm sure that it's related to the power of the unicorn and to the initiatic power which occurs at the Ajna Center when the fifth ray is prominent. The beam of light and the fifth ray are very closely connected. You know, while the, well, let's put it like this. The fifth ray lord is the most luminous of all the ray lords. And whereas he says the second ray souls at this time are the most luminous of the soul types. You put the second and the fifth ray together, you get the rays that are used by the solar angels and which distinguish them. Of course, they are far beyond any possibility of the kind of glamours that overcome us. They are dealing with cosmic issues. But of course, there are cosmic glamours too, but you know, one thing at a time, we'll all get there. So I'll begin to read here. We've just been going through the three stages of focusing. The last two times, the attempt to focus the light of the mind and of matter in the mental vehicle. Then the second stage of focusing process is produced through the effort to meditate. And we discussed the kind of meditation we have to do. And the third stage is that in which the light of matter, the light of mind, and the light of the soul are consciously blended, fused, and focused, and they can be used as a beam of dissipation. At first, we just have to recognize what we're dealing with, you know, and to recognize the veils that may be hiding, obscuring reality from oneself is not the same as being able to do something about it. But recognition certainly does come first, and clear self-observation and common sense and a little bit of humility, you know, those things will promote the existence of the little point of light which helps us with the recognition and will set us up for the right kind of active work. So he begins here on page 211, it looks like. The process I am developing for you is one of rapid and effective dissipation. Okay, the beauty of this is that, you know, once we really know what we're doing, we can operate relatively effectively in a brief and quick manner, just the way triangles can be done that way. We don't need to have very, very prolonged meditations. We can be effective in a short time. So rapid and effective dissipation, and is based upon the acceptance of the hypothesis of light. Well, really, the entire universe is light at various degrees of precipitation or condensation. So the hypothesis of light, we're working in the light, we are light workers, light bearers, and we are working with that substance, which is light. We can't, of course, work with the highest types of light. They're way beyond us. They're cosmic in nature, but we can work with light that is more tenuous, more powerful, more revelatory than the light in which we usually see the illusions of the dense physical body of the planetary logos. That's where we live in, you know, the lower 18 subplanes. There's a kind of light there, but we're going to deal with a higher form of light than that. Okay, it's based upon the acceptance of the hypothesis of light, upon the recognition of the fact that the astral plane has no true existence. All these forms we create out of the substance of that level of nature are unreal, and they are veils, and they are the creations of the ones who desire and the ones who think. You know, as I said before, from occult chemistry, we learned that there can be no discontinuity between the etheric plane and the mental plane. There has to be a form of matter found there. But the creations within that realm of matter are considered to be glamorous to a great extent. The creations themselves are the unreality, and man, misguided and under the impression of a limited consciousness and limited desire, has created these astral forms. So the astral plane has no true existence, he says, although the matter of the astral plane, I think we have to think, does have its reality. Thus, the alignment to be established is between soul, mind, and brain, and we hear this all the time, bypassing the astral plane, at least not considering it. Soul, mind, and brain is the alignment we have to establish. Upon a trained use of the creative imagination, this is not just active imagination where you let it run, guided by purposeful will and mind, and upon the unquestioning following of instructions, individually and as a group. And of course, sometimes we say, well, I can do it my own way, but when the master makes a suggestion about what to do, it's probably the part of wisdom to follow it out. Okay, sometimes I put in my own comments here, just light is consciousness touching the hidden and revealing it. The hidden comes to light. Well, in the whole matter of what is light really, it is profound. We don't need to get into that philosophically right now. We can simply bring certain things to light, use the more subtle light, and thus create a world in which revelation comes to consciousness more than it presently does. It is my intention to give you two formulas. Okay, we're familiar with that. One for the use of the individual and the other which groups can use as they contribute their united effort to the dissipation of glamour. That's what we're attempting to do. Either of group glamour, you know, national world glamour, or in relation to some aspect of the prevalent world glamour. Yeah, he said it. Our groups have glamours, of course they do, and the world is filled with it at this time. And we have that tendency in this type of solar system, which is largely a 2-4-6 solar system. And even though there's a lot of hardline rays connected with our planetary logos, he does have the second ray soul, and he is in the midst of what DK calls a certain cosmic glamour of personality. What that may be, we cannot fully fathom. Two things will be apparent to you. First, and these are our two main points. First, that those participating in the eradication of glamour must be able to distinguish between glamour and reality. Well, apparently that's not so simple. These often closely resemble each other on a superficial examination. So many people who are channeling the masters from the astral plane, you know, they are convinced that they are dealing with the real thing, when in fact it's simply a resemblance, a flattering resemblance, you might say. And in the case of Master DK, was speaking what he called good words of mediocre cheer, arresting words, you know, they were flattering the person who came in touch with them. So they resemble each other on a superficial examination. These people who can really work in this field must be in a position to recognize that an emotional or astral condition constitutes a veil over the truth. Okay, sometimes we feel very moved emotionally, and it's very cleansing in some ways, but it's not necessarily the revelation of a deeper truth, and is a distortion of the presentation or the appearance of the individual's or the group's expression of divinity. So this astral veil is largely self-created, or created by the counter force to hold humanity back, is veiling us, is hiding a deeper truth from us, and we have to dissipate that, and the bubble of glamour must burst. So these people, such as we attempt to be, they must therefore be capable of vision, clear thinking, see, all this stuff is going on at the Agnes Center, isn't it? And prompt recognition as to what is preventing the materialization of that vision and the accurate reception of truth. There's a lot of the energy of Sagittarius here, which is active at the first and second initiations, and the rays that are coming through Sagittarius are the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth. Largely the sixth, but the fifth is there as well. So the Agnes Center, the discovery of truth, the sign Libra, the planet Venus with its fifth ray operating here at the Agnes Center, all of these things are coming to be a bit operative as we undertake this kind of task. We must be capable of clear vision, not biased, not swayed by what we want, but seeing things as they are. And that's what the psychologist Roberto Assagioli advised. He says, observe yourself as if it was a scientific experiment, and as if you didn't care what you saw. You know, you are the object, and you are the observer at the same time, and simply see what you see, and don't worry about what you want. Divorce yourself from what you want, and see things as they are. Prompt recognition, clear thinking, prompt recognition as to what is preventing the materialization of that higher divine vision, which is the property of all of us, on the soul level, and even more so on the monadic level. They must also be able to distinguish between a major and a minor glamour. And this is interesting. A minor glamour, a passing, evanescent thought form, or, you know, desire form, of an easily recognized recognizable nature, does not warrant the use of either of the formulas. Such a minor glamour would be a sense of self-pity, you know, a wave of self-pity. Maybe we all get those from time to time. A sense of self-pity in an individual, or the glorification of some notable individual by an individual or group or nation. So this is sort of the hero worship, looking with a certain form of devotion upon a leader. You know, Germany was swept by tremendous glamour there. I think it became major rather than minor, because Germany had a Pisces personality and was very easily impressed by these astral forces. So they looked to the Führer, you know, the leader, and I think what could have been maybe a minor glamour in an individual became a major national glamour. Anyway, he says, time and common sense suffice to take care of the situation. So we're not going to overcome this in one, you know, short moment, but we will have common sense, the synthesis of all the five senses, and the ability to think factually. The common sense is very much ruled or connected with the fifth ray, even though it is the sixth sense, not in the usual sense, but there's the sixth and seventh sense. The seventh is the esoteric sense. The common united sense of all the senses is the sixth sense, at least in this teaching. A major glamour in the world prior to the war, and by that I think he means also World War I, was the emphasis put upon possessions, you know, which are unrealities. I mean, the Buddha wouldn't stand for that, would he? Put upon possessions and the belief that happiness was dependent upon things and upon material good and comfort. One of the heads of the Hydra is, of course, the head of comfort, as if some kind of reassurance can be given by the immovability of physical objects, whereas in the inner worlds, things are very fluid, and a person might feel more insecure in the presence of such movement. Anyway, this has been somewhat broken, he told us, through the World War process, but of course, there are many who are up and coming, and it's still a big glamour for them. Okay, now the second part here, two things will be apparent to you. The first is that we have to distinguish between glamour and reality. That's number one. And that's not easy at all. And sometimes we need the help of others in order to do it, as they point things out. Second, that the three stages of focusing referred to above, I began with those, you know, the light of matter, then meditation, and then the three lights, because you don't reach the higher soul light without meditation, usually anyway. So you can begin effectively with the light of matter and mind and not be soul-oriented. Then you begin to meditate, you become soul-oriented, then you can bring in the higher light and all three come together. So anyway, the three stages of focusing referred to above constitute a preparatory process. These three stages must be somewhat developed before the effective use of the formula can be possible. So we have to develop this focusing power. And those intending to work at the task of ridding the world of glamour, and this is very important, must subject themselves constantly to these phases in the art of polarization. Well, with polarization, you fix your attention on a certain level. You have to be able to fix your attention at will on any level, within the personality, within the realm of matter, within the realm of mind, and then later, within the realm of soul, the art of polarization. Penetration, polarization, precipitation. Those are the three P's, and we have to penetrate, affix our consciousness, and then almost instantaneously, the precipitation from the level that we have polarized upon will occur. Anyway, they must have an understanding of the apparatus of thought, of the creation of thought forms, and of the nature of the thinker. And this, you know, comes in those 15 white magical councils. The thinker and his thought and that which is the means of thought are one, and we have to recognize that. Now, here we have to be discriminative here, very careful. They must be emotionally polarized, yet in group work, relatively free from astral control. In other words, we have to have, let's call it facility with engaging with the astral plane. Now, to have that kind of facility does not mean that you are necessarily subject to the astral plane or are really having a non-mental focus and an entire mental polarization. This will become clear. They must be emotionally polarized, yet in group work, relatively free from astral control, and hopefully in individual life too. This astral liberation, okay, it really occurs more completely at the second initiation, but we can get to work on all of this before that time. This astral liberation must, to a certain extent, control the choice of those who are to work at major dissipations, not just the minor individual dissipations, but those things that are really troubling the world. And, you know, DK, out of those students who came to the Arcane School and out of those students that he knew and which were contacted by Alice Bailey because of his advice, he had to choose which of the students belonged in which groups. And as I've said before, there was a lot of sixth ray in the choice of those that he designated for work in this group. The telepathic communicators comprised largely those who were the founders of the Arcane School and who were very close to Alice Bailey and were disciples of maybe more experience. And then there were the healers and the educators. That's really as far as he got. Okay, so it must determine the choice of those who will work at the major dissipations. Now, in a way, we are, even at the outset, working at a major dissipation, the glamour of hatred and of separativeness, and we see it rife in the world today. In the case of the individual who is seeking to break up glamour in his individual life, he should be mentally polarized by decision and effort. Now, that does not mean he's mentally polarized. Let's get this in mind. By decision and effort. He is deciding to be so, he's willing to be so, and he's making the effort to be so. And I'll show you where mental polarization really comes in. In the case of the individual who is seeking to break up glamour in his individual life, he should be mentally polarized by decision and effort, even if the emotional nature is for him in any one life the line of least resistance. And if we turn to this over here, And this is in the Raised and Initiations later on in the book. Looks like quite a bit later on in the book, page 600. Take a look at this, and it's very, very interesting and very, very important when you want to talk about mental polarization. During the initiatory process between the second and third initiation, the initiate has to battle with illusion in exactly the same sense as he earlier had to battle with glamour. Illusion is, in the last analysis, the control of mental processes by great and massive thought forms. You know, when we refuse to really think for ourselves and cannot be independent of what everybody else thinks, we are subject to illusion. This conflict persists from the moment that the disciple has achieved mental polarization at a midway point between the second and third initiations until he stands before the initiator at the sixth initiation of decision, when the last illusion disappears. And elsewhere he even tells us, in a larger sense, that we are not free of the illusions of the cosmic physical plane until we take the ninth initiation. But at least we are monads in consciousness by the time we take the sixth degree, the initiation of decision. So here we have true mental polarization occurring at the midway point between the second and third initiations. And, you know, this will be familiar to you as the three temptations in the desert. You have to overcome, you know, the world, the flesh, and the devil. And then you are free to take the Syrian line of initiations and go on to take the true first initiation, which is the third initiation. But only then will there be a mental polarization such that the higher mind becomes a definite factual aspect in the thinking process of the lower mind. And this is what I think he means by mental polarization. And until we rid ourselves of some of these world, flesh, and devil problems, that cannot be the case. So keep that in mind when he's talking here about being mentally polarized by decision and by effort, even though it's not the true mental polarization. Going on, those working in group formation will have achieved a measure of mental focus. See, there's quite a difference between what I would call mental focus, and notice how he discusses it, a measure of mental focus, not the entire thing, okay? But at the same time, if we were completely cut off from the astral plane, you know, like there are certain egos, let's say they've come in from Vulcan, maybe they've come in from Mercury, and they do not have the development of the second petal. They do not have the love stirring, the love movement in their egoic lotus, and they have to develop that. So they would not, even though they have the sharpest of minds and can and work successfully in mental material ways, they are not appropriate for the dissipation of glamour because they're just learning how to get some of this second petal and I would say even fifth petal vibration into their system. Anyway, those working in group formation will have achieved a measure of mental focus, not the same as mental polarization, but for the purposes of the work to be done, they will focus themselves consciously and deliberately upon the emotional plane. That's what we're doing. We're attempting to do that even though we don't let it control us. Through the control of their own natures, in other words, we will to direct our personality vehicles to whatever level of consciousness we decide. So when it comes to the mind, we can direct it out onto the astral plane, and we come on rapport with the astral plane. Workers must therefore, and that's us, that have practiced meditation, have reflected much upon the nature of thought and its uses, and must be aware of the light within. Well, this is pretty strong requirements. We have practiced meditation. We continue to do so. We are thinking about thought as we study in the various occult schools. There's a lot that we direct our attention to that has to do with how we use our mind and what thought is and of what nature it should be. And gradually we become aware of an inner light which is kindled as the light of the soul and the light of the mind and the light of the brain come into rapport with each other. Now let's see what else. When these three stages are established as related activities, habits, and automatic reactions, that's, you know, the ability to focus the three lights and to meditate, and when the intention is fixed, it's not really will, but it's fixed intention, and it's a step on the way, and when the intention is fixed, it's very Taurian, it's what we members of the new group of world servers have to have, and when the intention is fixed and the ability to focus has become an almost instinctual reaction, automatic, you know, second nature to us, then sound and effective work can be done. To this work must be added persistence and patience, rhythmic application over time, and that's what we're attempting to do. It is not necessary, I might add, to have achieved perfection, and we should remind ourselves of that. Otherwise, we'll always be tearing ourselves down because we have not met our own expectations. It is not necessary, I might add, to have achieved perfection in the process before starting this work and service. Disciples and aspirants must cultivate the consciousness of cooperation and realization that in service, such as is proposed, and this is very important, they are definitely participating in a hierarchical activity. Because hierarchy does this. Hierarchy is involved with the dissipation of glamour. And some of those upon the second path, the path of magnetic work, are fifth-ray monads working on the cosmic astral plane, and they are working in such a way that they are healing and cleansing our own astral plane. In other words, work with glamour proceeds from a very, very high level, even on the cosmic astral plane. So we are involved in a great hierarchical activity at a very low level of it, okay, but we are being reinforced by that inner work of these much greater beings than we are. So we are participating in a hierarchical activity and are therefore in a position to render help, that's us, we can render help if they could not, even if they could not alone and unaided achieve the desired results. It reminds me, you know, that I'm remembering some things from Agni Yoga, and Master Maurya says, well, you know, you enter the battle with the counterforce, and the higher members of the hierarchy use, grab, take aspects of your aura, and they sort of throw it at the enemy. That's the impression, a very first-rate kind of impression. But the idea is that without them behind us, directing the energy that we present sacrificially to be used, there would not be success. So this is a cooperative battle with the forces of obstruction and the forces of delusion, the forces of concealment, the ones that hide reality, and hierarchy is cooperating with us as we cooperate with them. Okay, so we can be confident even though we're not perfect. They can hasten the process by their combined help. The power of united effort upon the physical plane is being realized today on a large scale. And the war effort in all countries has greatly hastened this realization. That's physical cooperation. That's going through the three levels. The power of unified emotion, often expressing itself in what is called mob psychology, is everywhere recognized and feared, as well as exploited. This is where he says that we have to really cultivate the proper public opinion. This is involved with the emotional plane. It's involved with kama manas, and it can be used for good or for ill. Now, here is the point, and this is where we're trying to work. The power of unified thought is still little grasped as yet, and the power inherent in the light of many minds, rendering them effective instruments in world affairs, penetrating and dissipating glamour, and proving creative upon the physical plane, will prove to be a part of the new modes of work which will be employed in the new age. So we're beginning in a pioneering effort here. This was written, of course, 70 years ago, but still it's a pioneering effort. For this, the hierarchy has planned and worked, and it is now prepared to test the effectiveness of that work by organizing a group or groups which will work upon the problem of glamour, and that's what we are doing here. Now, I think I always have, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to do one more, if you'll bear with me, because this is what I intended to do to go this far. You can see, consequently, that what I am outlining is relatively new. Even now, it's relatively new, 70 years later. Truly effective work by humanity upon glamour has not been thoroughly organized, and in a couple of hundred years, there certainly will be, especially once Vulcan is discovered. You know, you think about Taurus, how important it is in terms of the mother of illumination, you might say, how it's related to the Ajna Center, how its ruler is Venus, how it rules the new group of world servers, and how it's possible to direct that beam of light via Taurus, the so-called Eye of the Bull. And when Vulcan is discovered, the power of Taurus is going to be immensely increased, and humanity's access to it will be greatly increased, and we'll be able to work together in a very powerful and scientific manner, and now we're just beginning that. The faint impression of the coming technique, as far as the individual is concerned, has been registered. Okay, we know a little bit about what we're supposed to do. Men and women everywhere are attempting to rid themselves of glamour, and these are legitimate means, by the power of clear thinking, stern discipline, and common sense. Okay, well, you know, clear thinking, of course, the fifth ray, the power of observation, the power of analysis, all the rest of it. Stern discipline, you don't let your astral body get out of control, and common sense, just being factual, synthesizing the five senses into one, and observing life as it is, and not according to the bias of how we would like it to be. And by a recording consciously of their relation to the whole. That's our evening review. That's our constant self-observation. We are as if on two levels simultaneously. We're in the world and yet not of it. We are acting as a personality, hopefully an increasingly soul-infused personality, and also acting as the observer of that personality. And if we do all this, you know, these requirements, it will prompt us, them, to eliminate out of their lives, our lives, all that could hinder others or increase world deception through glamour. Now, you know how before the various initiations, Pluto is so important. Every one of the initiations, first, second, third, you can see Pluto at work because we're still working with the Hydra, and Pluto is what helps us conquer that Hydra along with Mercury. You know, the various rulers of Scorpio along with Mars as well. So we have Pluto here helping us throw out, cast out, get rid of from the aura everything that could hinder ourselves, hinder others, and somehow increase the veiling power of glamour. We want to be those who see clearly. To this will be added, perhaps as an aspect of the New World religion, now on its way towards externalizing, the realization that groups can successfully clear away the glamours, which, notice the word, darken humanity's way to the goal, through the power of combined and projected thought. And, you know, it will be of interest to you to remember or to reflect upon the fact that the chakras involved in the New World religion group and those involved in the glamour group are the same. I believe they're the same. And they involve the head center, the heart center, and the solar plexus center. Now, I just want to make sure I'm accurate there. I know some of them are the same. But if I go to Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, and I go to about page 40 or so, we'll see what's going on here. Okay, let's see. Yep, head, heart, solar plexus, group 2. Head, heart, and solar plexus. This is necessarily the same as group two. Here it is, yeah. Now, of course, the Asana Center is also very important in the dissipation of glamour. And we are working with the Asana Center and with the centers in the head as we do this. All right, I think I've spoken enough, and what I'm going to do, probably have spoken too much, what I'm going to do here is make this small. I don't know if we can get it all under our eye at the same time. I doubt it. I'd have to make it so small that it would be just about illegible, but let's see. That's pretty small. And hopefully, if we get out our reading glasses or whatever else we need, we'll be able to see what we need to see as we consider these things. All right. So, I don't want to bring it down to number five. That's just ridiculous. Too low. It's at number six. That's about as low as you can go. All right, friends. This is our opportunity to ask questions, make statements, either about what we've been reading, what's occurred to us, or what we've been thinking about during the week. I see something here from Rebecca. Brett, I think that's correct. Okay, but now,
yes.
I want to try to get there. Okay. Glamorous characteristics number two. They endeavor to dispel glamour through what they believe to be right method by calling in the soul, whereas they really need to use the mind correctly. Yeah, until we have used the mind with real clarity, which is, you know, the training which begins to occur around the second initiation, we have the possibility, it's very interesting, of augmenting glamour through soul application. And that's because the discriminating mind allows the soul energy to impact the unanalyzed, not clearly seen astral condition. What is meant here, okay, by calling in the soul? Well, through meditation, of course, but we sometimes call in the soul and we don't keep the mind really focused. We call in soul energy, and actually generically, just as personality has an impact upon the physical nature, so soul has an automatic impact upon the emotional nature, and the monad and its ray has an automatic impact upon the mind. So we have to have a well-trained mind to call in the soul properly, otherwise we induce a kind of mystical consciousness, which may be revelatory in some respects, but may also be filled with glamour and may not easily be conveyed to others, and take us away on some kind of spiritual glamour to which common sense and the fifth ray should be applied. So let me see here what more we have. Is this using the solar plexus or the lower astral, i.e. pleading instead of using the higher mind to dissipate glamour? I think that's a good way of putting it. The mind is a great balancing and leveling factor, especially when it's the illumined mind, and the fifth ray process, which all of us have to learn to use, is being applied. Sending love and gratitude to you. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. We all have to support each other. I appreciate that. So anyway, look, it's so easy, Rebecca, for the mystic. And we've all been there, and we have to retain those abilities to call in some higher power and call it God, you know, call it the soul, call it the presence, whatever we want to call it, but not be really balanced and well-trained and really clear-seeing in our mental nature. And as a result, this tremendous energy sort of feeds the things in our astral body which are not thoroughly seen through. And so, therefore, in the kind of occult training that we're involved in, with Alice Bailey and the Tibetan and so forth, the cultivation of the sharp, analytical, clear, commonsensical mind is a real requirement, so we don't get carried away on some kind of quasi-spiritual trip which does not measure itself properly against the requirements of the time and the real things that have to be done. So just in short, calling in the soul is good, but really the mind has to be trained to handle soul energy. If the full soul energy were to come in, it would totally unbalance us, and the mind is a great, under Libra, it's a great balancing factor, and we can control the application of soul energy in the proper way. I think this is what is meant. But it is interesting. He says, look, call in the intuition to dispel illusion. And the soul and the intuition goes together. When dispelling glamour, apply the sharp beam of mind. Now, we also know that that beam of mind is reinforced by soul energy and by will energy, but it has to be a very clear thinking mind. We have to see what glamour is, discriminate, and we have to see the consequences of glamour, and then the more powerful energies can really help us be rid of it. This is a big study, a question that you've drawn our attention to, and I don't pretend to have answered the entirety of it, but at least that's the idea as I see it. Thank you. What else? Anything, your comments, thoughts, questions based on the last week of work, whatever. Any thoughts, questions that you'd like to deal with? You know, frankly, Alice Bailey wants us to meditate. She says, you know, you can study. It's great. You need to. But you can study so much that you never learn how to meditate. And meditation, we saw, was the second stage of focusing. In the beginning, you think clearly and unite matter and mind, and even the counterforce can do that. But they rigorously exclude the soul. Now, you have to pull in, I'll be there with you, you have to pull in through meditation the soul powers. And remember, the soul powers are mental as well as filled with love. So it's Venus. It's the union of heart and mind. It's the union of love and mind. Those things have to be pulled in, and all keeping the balance all the time. Otherwise, we just let these powerful energies impact what's going on in our personality, and it runs away with us, and we lose the control we have to have. Okay, what else? I hear voices. I'm hearing
Michael,
voices. Oh, Tuya, is that okay?
Do you hear me?
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't even see. Yeah, go ahead, Tuya, please, go ahead.
Yes, because I cannot lift my hand. So, do you hear me okay? Okay, I was just thinking in the beginning when we were reading about the light and the meditation preparations for the reappearance. And these three lights that we are talking there about, the light in the humanity itself and the light in the new group of world servers and those who have the open heart and working for the fellow men, and then the light of hierarchy. This part in the meditation is always also reflecting in my mind about the how one can also in practical terms to dissipate the clamorous when we align with that idea of the light in the hierarchy streaming and merging with the light of humanity.
That's so important. It's a totally cooperative effort we're involved in here. And we must be mentally trained disciples. And the soul is light. And the soul, as we understand it in the first stages, is focused on the higher mental plane. The soul is the thinker. We're not going to revert to the old method of simply feeling our way into divinity. It's good. We need it. We need Neptune. We need this sense of being able to touch higher and more refined things. But we also have to see. And this in sight comes the synthesis. And sight is linked with the mind. So in cultivating the senses, we are at the stage in this Aryan root race when we have to cultivate the mental approach to the soul, having already cultivated something of the sentient approach to the soul. So we work in the higher light, we bring it in, but we bring it in a responsible manner. DK once said that if the full powers of the soul were released into the personality, and especially the unprepared personality, it would just destroy the personality completely, and we'd have to start rebuilding again. So, responsible use of the higher light with mental discipline. Okay, thank you. I hope I know I turned myself off in order to hear Tuya better, and I hope I haven't been speaking for okay, very good. Thanks, Brett. I thought, goodness, I've been yakking on here without a microphone, but I know you would interrupt me and tell me that I was doing that. Okay, thank you, Tuya. Now, what else? What else, friends? You know, it's subtle work, and it's not visible work. We're working behind the scenes, and it's dangerous work because, you know, we're so easily overcome by the very thing we attempt to clear away. So, you know, that's why we use these protective formulas about how the power of darkness, we work in the light and the power of the darkness cannot touch us. It is dangerous work because it's subtle, and it is the major method at this time, not illusion. It's the major method by which the counterforce, the left-hand path, the Dark Brothers, they intend to hoodwink humanity. You know, you put the blindfold on humanity. The spreading of glamour in human consciousness is the major method by which the Black Lodge works. And then all the fear and all the confusion and the chaos and all the rest, which they seem to desire, follows this inability to perceive clearly. So we are trying to be clear perceivers in the world today. Now, you know, I'm gonna sidetrack here for a second. We have an election coming up in America. And probably, you know, it's a world election, really. And it has, in my view, clear values at stake. Now, we know that none of us is perfect and no candidate is perfect. We're just not there yet. We're not perfection. Even Lincoln was not perfect. FDR was not perfect. They all had their foibles. But when I look at the choice that is confronting America and the world today, I ask myself a simple question. Which candidate is more likely to lead to the expression of the soul of America, which is the same as the soul of the Occident and the eventual soul ray of humanity? And which candidate will have a personality and policies which are more likely to lead to the personal expression of America and to the huge sixth ray which is continuing to influence humanity as a whole, because so many human beings are still in the Atlantean phase of consciousness, or just slowly entering the ability to think. And then, of course, you know, it's just obvious to me, everyone will have to make their own choice about this. I'm not just looking at personal issues. I'm looking at the fate of nations and the fate of humanity from a ray perspective. And that's how I try to see clearly, regardless of maybe I'll dislike something from the candidate I will choose and like something from the candidate I won't choose. But I try to keep it impersonal and based upon the energies themselves and the destiny of the various nations involved, the destiny of the Occident, and the destiny of humanity in the world. That's just sharing a little bit of this business about clear thinking. Hopefully we're all doing that. Okay. Are there any further things that we wish to say or ask before we get into our Meditation for the Dissipation of the Glamour of Hatred and Separativeness.
Michael, I have one.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, please, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about the mystery of light still, that how the words are carrying the light and what kind of light. When I'm thinking about the Master's words that we read, what does it do for us? It starts to open all the time in our minds, like continuous revelations. And the motive that we, of course, we know that Master has the motives, high motives. Oh my God, did I say anything?
I tried
to repeat, yes. I was thinking about the how Master has good motives, and this mystery which is carried through the words, the inner light in different radiation. So when Master talks and he starts to open our minds, the like the continuous revelations through his words, and how also the same principle is carried, that our words, what we say, what is the motive behind us, is also coming through the words. So then when we think about the and you were pointing out about the candidates, the same thing everywhere, where we can see that when some people are talking, expressing, it starts to heal us, it starts to uplift us, it starts to do something. So always there is this hidden thing, which is the most important in life. It's either will bring us towards the higher light, or starts to just bound horizontally, or even go worse to the past. So at this time, it was just giving me some insight that I have met during the years, people who has been saying about DK's books that I started to read and I just cannot, it's too much, I don't want that, I don't like it. And that is with the clamors, that there is this some interesting relationship with the Devic, like the Agnishvatas, the fiery element which comes upon the emotions, the watery element, and it starts to irritate when you hear or when you are in touch with the higher light, and that starts to open up the doors for the clamors, where we should do something, and we either close it or we open the door.
Yes, we have to be able to withstand the changing of our customary ways of being. And when the light is, as you say, when it's shed upon the glamours, a form of friction occurs, a form of irritation in those people who are attached to the glamours. And we have to be able to withstand that somehow. So, you know, this is not easy work, but we are bringing the light through our words, through our radiation, through our vision, through our intention. We are all attempting to be light bearers, and you can really realize the tremendous amount of light that Master DK has brought to us through his words, disclosing, revealing worlds which we did not at all suspect. He has brought so much to light, and may our own words, as we speak to others, carry the light. Okay, friends, we're getting to the point now where we'll do our meditation, I think, unless there is something crucial that somebody would like to say before we begin. I'm just scanning here. Anyway, I'm very grateful for your presence. And, you know, if we all stay steady in this, and, you know, if some 20, 30 people meet every week in this way, it is significant. So thank you for being here, and now let's get to work. Put yourself on self-mute, I would say, and then we can work together in a manner that we are now familiar with. Okay, so world glamour, the glamour of hatred and separativeness, certainly these are major glamours, not just a passing self-pity or a passing wave of devotion. This is major stuff. So we are gathered together here, about 28 or of us, it looks like, at the moment. And we'll have some moments of silence in which we think of each other as souls, wherever we may be, in the personality sense. And in the silence, we feel our group cohesion growing. And we're on our way to becoming an effective instrument to focus the triple light. And then, with humility, realizing that there are risks doing this kind of work, we say the protective formula together, and we make the sign of the cross, as DK has told us to do, the forehead, the center of the chest, and the left eye and the right eye. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. And we ponder those words. Thank you. So we are really units of light. The soul is light. And using the instrument available to us, we're going to work to clarify certain conditions on the astral plane. So let us imaginatively focus the dual light of matter and of mind. This is all done in the mental body. We draw up the light of matter imaginatively, the vitality, into the mental body, and there it meets the light of mind, the power to think and to reveal the nature of what we think about and the relations. Matter and mind united through the creative imagination. So we have an acute power of thought. And then we meditate on soul contact and the recognition of soul light. We can visualize this however we wish, whatever works best for us. But there is a higher light. It is always present. And in our meditation, in our creative imagination, we, as it were, touch this soul light. And then we witness in the imagination the fusion of the two lesser lights with soul light, bringing the soul light down onto the into the usual mental body. Until we get the sense of that triple light forming as one. And then we're going to say together, the sacred word, three times, perhaps for each type of light, the three in one. The light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. and we want to gain facility individually and as a group in the using of this light. And then the formula. And as we say the words of the formula, we visualize the great searchlight that we are creating, turned upon the astral plane. Come en rapport with the astral plane, turn the great searchlight upon the astral plane, the group light made of all the many lights of the group members. We say, radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. And contemplating these words, we see the great searchlight we have created effectively impacting the astral plane. Soul light, mental light, the light of matter as one, a real group instrument. And then we're going to further strengthen this group beam by the invocation of the spiritual will. Coming from the monad ultimately, but especially from the plane Atma, it's a Libran plane, a Saturnian plane. Through the soul, through the jewel and the lotus, the synthesis will petal, the sacrifice petals, the spiritual will descends into the beam that we have created, and we say, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. We have an empowered beam of light on the astral plane, made of three lights as one. We remember now, our work is with two glamours, really one united problem, hatred and separativeness, the latter being the greatest of all heresies or mistakes of the mind. And as we say these three words of power, we will be visualizing the light, the beam, penetrating into the glamour, producing its weakening and its dissipation. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of hatred and separativeness. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour. And bearing these three words of power in mind, we will have 5 minutes of silence with intensity of purpose as we see this work proceeding, this work of penetrating the glamour, producing its weakening and dissipation. 5 minutes of silence. And as we continue to work, we trust that our ability to cooperate in this line of hierarchical work will increase. And as a group, we will be increasingly effective in dissipating the glamours which hold humanity in thrall, and as individuals, we will be increasingly effective in dissipating the glamours which hold us individually in thrall. So we now withdraw the beam imaginatively onto the mental plane, we refocus ourselves in the mind, and we imaginatively turn off the searchlight. And we will sound the Om three times in the faith that some piece of work has been done to clarify the glamorous condition of the astral plane, and especially with regard to the prevalent glamours of hatred and separativeness. We just want to say that all these approaches that we've been using in the ASK project, invocation project, you might say, they're all interrelated. The triangles, the reappearance of the Christ, the glamour work, the invocation of the soul of nations, and the attracting money for hierarchical purposes, all interrelated. And I'm sure the more we work along this line, the more we will see and understand that that is the case. We're leaving the far north tomorrow. If I possibly can, I'll offer in the morning the Destiny of the Nations reading, maybe a little abbreviated, and some meditation upon the very disturbed, troubled places in the earth. We still have so much violence going on. And then we'll see when it comes to the attracting money for hierarchical purposes, we cannot do that in the morning of Sunday, our morning. We'll try to let you know if it becomes possible to work in the evening, the 5 p.m. time. But in case you tune in tomorrow and we're not there, you'll know that the exigencies of travel have prevented being able to offer the program. But let us persist together in this ASK project, also doing our full moon work. Let us persist and work subjectively in a way that can make a difference, and we can know that it can make a difference. So thank you for your attendance this morning, this afternoon, this evening, whatever it is for you. And many blessings, and we'll be seeing you, you know, hopefully tomorrow morning. And if not, we're on the road. But we'll do our best. Okay. All the best to everybody. From Olivia and Tuya and myself, many blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.